fishing. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Yes, indeed, boys and girls, moms and dads. Guess who, you lucky little devils? Yes, it's him. It's he. It's me. Fishing Frank here, and RJ in command and control, and Robert somewhere in the world. We're not sure where he's at, but he ain't here. So, today we've got the lovely and talented Jeannie.
I thought you were going to say me.
Yes, well, you are talented.
Okay, yes. We'll go with that.
We have half of that.
I'll buy half, yeah.
All right. Jeannie is a host of Fishy Radio, which will be coming soon to the big WKDW in Northport, Florida. About not next week, but the week after. She's going to be on Friday with her and her co-host. And then we have Austin. And Austin is the man, the fishing guy, the real manufacturer guy. I mean, so we're gonna ask Jeannie, ask your question.
So, who exactly are you?
Okay,
sitting next to her in this radio show. Yes. What does that mean for the fate of the world?
Welcome, but why are you here?
So, I work in the fishing industry. I work for a fishing reel manufacturer.
Okay.
Accurate Fishing Reels out of Corona, California. We're a USA-based company. We build and specialize in twin-drag conventional offshore fishing reels.
Okay.
So, if you are very familiar with a California fishery, long-range tuna, bluefin, yellowfin, you know, your Mexico waters kind of stuff. That's kind of our background in terms of what
now,
we build.
Do you have to dress up in rainbow colors to fish in California?
Yes, a little bit.
Is there anything kind of special, like you got to walk out on your tiptoes to the dock?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I've been to Long Beach a couple times out there, and it's a different world. It's a different world. So,
So are your reels made in the U.S.?
They are 100% made in the U.S.,
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
Yep.
Okay.
Even our materials we get in the U.S., we don't outsource anything. So.
Wow, that's great.
Definitely something to be proud of, for sure.
Absolutely.
So, Accurate Reels, made in the U.S., Austin. Now, you're also a certified tech. So,
yes.
Accurate Reels aren't like a lot of them where you can just break them down and do a lot of maintenance yourself. These are some really... They put them together, so you really got to be factory certified just to get them apart and do maintenance on them.
Definitely. So we hold one of the tightest tolerances in the fishing reel industry. We hold all of our tolerances to 1/1000th of an inch, and we don't really stray from that at all. So from our small screws, it's a T6 Torx head, not a Phillips head screwdriver, anything's open into this reel. And it's, you know, the highest quality of 6061 aircraft aluminum mixed with your 17-4 stainless, your 304-303 stainlesses that are... I mean, unmatched in terms of quality, in terms of material we use.
Just out of curiosity, did you understand any of that?
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive.
So a lot of the stainless stuff it's based on how corrosive it is or how hard or brittle it is. So there's some mixtures of that in fishing reels that make it smooth or will make it a little rougher, grindier feel to it. And
so we can put wings on this reel, and it will fly.
It could, yeah. Here we go, yeah.
So
Accurate's background is aerospace, so that's where kind of our tolerances come from in the fishing
question.
Reel itself.
So how long has Accurate been around?
We've been around for, going on 25 years now, building reels.
Wow, okay.
We started building conversion kits for Penn Senator reels, where Accurate kind of started, and prior to that we built gaffs, so... The fishing side of Accurate was building gaffs strong enough to gaff Pacific Mako sharks.
Wow.
So
you've been around a while.
Yeah, they've been around a while.
In the fishing industry
a
while.
The company itself has been around since 1950, the aerospace side of it. So.
All right. So one of the things Accurate does where they, when you have a normal reel, one of the things about it is they have a feature where it compresses. Used to be leather disc, and nowadays there's felt, and there's kind of these new graphite materials and all that, where you're literally pressing some type of materials together to slow down the reel. But now what Accurate does is they use a compression against a disc on one side or both sides of the reel. Is there something that makes having on one side better or worse, or on both sides better or worse?
So yeah, Accurate's known for having a twin drag reel. That's where our patent is. A very, you know, strong patent. No one else in the industry has a twin drag reel. And what means we have drag plates and drag washers on each side of the spool. So on a conventional reel in the marketplace, you're stopping that spool on one side, on the gear side. So if you imagine disc brakes on your truck, if you were to put disc brakes on one side of your right-hand side and you slam the brakes, I mean, your car's going to twist and torque.
Mm-hmm.
Every other reel in the industry is doing this, spool's doing that. So you're wear and tearing the reel over time while you're putting a lot of heat on it, a lot of pressure, a lot of drag. With the twin drag reel, you're able to do that on both sides of the spool, you know, kind of controlling that spool from and keeping it able to slow down under high pressure. So
now, I will say, if somebody's not sure about what we're talking about, where you have two metal plates compressing on a disc on one side of the spool, if you stop into the store, I have a cutaway reel. It's not an Accurate brand, it's another brand, but I can literally show you in the store exactly what we're talking about on the one side drag. I buy every cutaway reel I can find because I get interested too. What is this inside? What is that inside? But to give a little bit of a fishing report right now, we're going to jump into that. We're going to get back into it. We're going to do Red Snapper, Guy Grouper. We got a bunch of stuff. There's still a bunch of Spanish mackerel out in front of Bull and Turtle Bay a bit. Going out through Boca Grande Pass, Captiva Pass. We've got them in the near Gulf. There is still quite a few Spanish mackerel around. If you want to go out, catch something for a little dinner, or just have some fun with the Spanish mackerel. I would have to say the biggest thing in Charlotte Harbor right now, the most prevalent, is sharks. From 18, literally 8 inches long up to 14 feet long. We have a ton of sharks in Charlotte Harbor. And they're all along the barrier islands, the beaches, they're in the intercoastal. We've heard of sharks being caught all the way up to the Navigator on the Peace River. So whether you're in the Peace River, some of the canals, and it seems like the bull sharks have figured out that when it starts to rain, they can go up in the canals to where the dams are and get some easy food. And what I'm talking about is if you have freshwater fish, when it starts raining and they get washed over the dam, as they start swimming away from the dam, there gets to be a little bit of salt in the water. And freshwater fish, their gills get burned by salt water. So they're not healthy, they're still alive, they're swimming, but it's erratic, they can't escape well, their gills are being burned. So these are prime prey. These are great targets for your snook, tarpon, which we always knew about, but now we're finding out the bull sharks are actually coming up there for those as well. And we've seen this year probably the most bull sharks up in the canals for that washover feed, what's coming over the dams from the freshwater areas. But being washed over the dam in the freshwater areas out to the Gulf of Mexico, red snapper seems to be the big thing right now. American red snappers. Austin, how big do they get?
Well, the world record, I believe, is 50 pounds and 4 ounces. So, I mean, you're talking a 50-pound snapper, which is a monster.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, legal size, I think, is what, 11, 12, 14?
16 inches.
16 inches.
Yeah, total length.
And the Gulf of Mexico, it's 16-inch total length for American red snapper. Now, where would they normally hang out? What depth?
They can be caught anywhere from 30 feet of water, deeper than 300 feet of water.
So from 30 foot to 300 foot, pretty good range on them. Jeannie, have you ever caught an American red snapper?
I have not.
Now, there is a snapper that tries to fool you. People think, and we hear all the time, oh, I was at Ponce de Leon, mm-hmm. or I was at the 41 Bridge or I-75, and I was catching red snappers.
Mm-hmm. And now I've heard that.
So, yeah, I mean, people regularly say, oh, I was catching red snappers at I-75, 41, Ponce de Leon,
sure.
El Jubin. And those boys and girls are not red snappers.
Okay.
Absolutely not. They really, it's technically, RJ, they they could technically get up in the harbor, but I can't see them actually coming up. Can you?
No, I've never ever seen a red snapper up close in the canals or in, you know, Ponce de Leon or any of those other places.
You've dove in a lot of the places here, so when you dive in these places, you're actually seeing what's there.
Right, and I don't know, there's a number of things you look at in a fish to determine if it's a red snapper, and one of the things I learned is the size of their cheeks.
Size of their cheeks.
The cheeks. Red snappers have very
large
cheeks.
So it's a cutie little fish. You got a puffy cheek there.
That's right. You give them a little pinch, and if there's enough to pinch, it's a red snapper.
Well, the one thing that everybody calls red snapper is actually mangrove snapper.
Yes.
Because mangrove snappers have two names. They have red snapper, and Jeannie, do you know the other name? Gray snapper.
Okay.
You can say no. You don't sit there and shake your head.
No, I do not. Gray snapper.
Gray snapper. All right. If you're in Charlotte Harbor and you catch a mangrove snapper, it's a bright red belly and black stripe on its eye. Kind of a brownish back, but you got a, the first thing you see is all that red. Now, the exact same fish swimming in the Gulf of Mexico is going to be pure gray, light gray color. There's no color on that fish. It's gray, maybe a little bit of black stuff on it. That's pretty much about it, isn't it, RJ?
That's it, yeah. That's the mangrove snapper.
All right. Now, you're out there. You catch this fish. You go, wow, it looks kind of shaped like a mangrove snapper, but it doesn't look like a mangrove snapper. Take it off the hook. You put it in the ice chest. And then you go back, you're putting your other fish in, you open the chest, go, wow, where'd the mangrove snapper come from? As they get on the ice, they get the red belly back, and it's kind of a reddish-orange red, and the kind of brownish on the back, black stripe on its eye, and they have a lot of teeth. They kind of have the same teeth as a cat does. They're very sharp, pointy teeth, and when you go to get the hook out, you'll understand where the name snapper comes from. And the weirdest part about it is they're snapping that jaw, pop, 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 like a mousetrap going off, until your finger gets in there. Then try and get it open. That's, you know, you ever had one clamped down your finger, Austin?
I've had one clamped down on my toe.
On your toe?
Trying to move it to the back of the boat.
You had both hands were busy, so you get your toe up there to get the hook out of it.
I wear boots all the time on a boat, and the one day I didn't have them, I went to go move it to the back of the boat and got my pinky toe in the corner stuck right in the two little fang teeth at the top of his mouth. And
he held on pinky toe?
He held on pretty tight.
Oh, God.
Don't do it anymore. I wear boots all the time now because I've had that happen and a triggerfish. And triggerfish are right up there with the snapper.
Oh, easy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd almost rather have the snapper bite.
Yeah, I think so. The triggerfish hurt pretty good.
Yeah. RJ, you ever been bit by a snapper?
No, I haven't. But just a little bit of biology here. There's a couple of fish that see as well underwater as they see on the deck out in the air. Bluefish is one, and all of the snappers see extremely well in the air as well as they do underwater. Huh. So they see that finger and pinky toe coming.
They're gunning for it.
And they're ready for it, where, you know, the average saltwater fish, when you lay them on a deck, it's like you take my glasses off and I have no idea where I am. So
I have that whether I have glasses on or not. Right? Or today I'm having one of those days, I walk in the room, I have no idea why I'm there. You know, I actually went home yesterday, took a nap. It's that point. I'm trying to remember where pinky toes is where we were at.
we're boots on the deck, guys.
Yeah. All right, but mangrove snappers are regularly found in the harbor with bright red bellies, but they're not red snappers. Even though they have some red on them, let's not go there anymore. Out in the Gulf of Mexico, starting in 30 feet of water, we're going to let you get a little bit. Now, Jeannie, let's do a little promo for the place you work.
Sure. Tropical Construction Supply up in Murdoch. We're on Paulson Drive. Nuts, bolts, anchors. We are a family-owned company. We're not corporate. We've been there since 1989. We have three stores, two of them on Paulson. One is our showroom, and then we also have a tool repair store three doors down.
All right. Now, Tropical Construction Supply, Can I go there as just a regular guy who needs to buy stuff?
Absolutely. We
don't have to be a contractor to go there.
You don't have to have a license. We are open to the public. Absolutely.
Because I already know this, but I wanted you to say it because I've been shopping there for years.
Yep. Okay? And we appreciate
that. And in fact, I'm going there to get my air conditioning filters when we're done. Jeannie, here's my list. All the air conditioning filters and all that, we get all that at Fish and Frank's through Tropical Construction Supply. Up on Paulson. Just throw that in.
Yes, sir.
Austin, your time to advertise your company.
Okay, yeah, well, like I said, I work for Accurate Reels, and since we're talking about Red Snapper. Yep.
What would be the accurate reel that you would pick to fish in 30 to 60 feet of water for, say, American Red Snapper? Now, you get a choice. You get two reels to talk about. You get one that has the double drag,
okay,
and one that has the single drag on it, because you make both.
Definitely, we do.
So the one without the double drag is considerably less money.
It is, yes.
And now, in my opinion, I don't really know if I need the twin drag niceties and complexities in that shallower water.
Mm-hmm.
How much difference do you think it makes?
It really comes down to drag smoothness between the two reels. Granted that the single drag reel is still very smooth, but in terms of, you know, a twin drag reel, it's pretty much unmatched.
If I was in 30 to 60 feet of water and I was going to use it for red snappers, grouper, and then throw amberjack into the middle of it,
then you're talking, you probably want a twin drag reel.
Then you want a twin drag reel.
Definitely, yeah. If you're messing with jacks, it definitely helps to have that lower gear ratio.
The reef donkeys.
You're not going to want anything else, for sure. But I would...
But if I wasn't, I could get away with the single drag. Easily. What's the name of the one that has the single drag?
It's our Fury.
The Fury series. Yep. Now, I have those at the store.
Of course, yep.
And how big a reel, what line would you use to do your bottom fishing 30 to 60 feet of water?
So 30 to 60 feet of water, you can get a little more creative. Being that it's not that deep, the use of braided line probably isn't as necessary as if you were in deeper water. So you can get away with maybe a 30-pound mono or a 25-pound mono in that size reel, just depth and capacity related. But braided line is still going to be something you want to use to not have to stretch.
So what reel, what line on it?
I would do a Fury 400 2-speed. Would be a good reel, kind of versatile reel in that depth. I'd put 40 or 50 pound braid on it.
Okay. Now, that Fury 400, is that a fairly good size reel?
It is.
The problem people think of when they're doing reels is they think a 400 in every brand is the same size. And it's absolutely not true.
Definitely.
Your 400 is completely different than, say, a 40 or whatever in some of the other brands.
Definitely. And since we're... relative to the marketplace, we're a newer manufacturer, so we call a 400 size. There's no other real market or real manufacturer that calls anything a 400. We're going off of braid specs. If you go to most manufacturers, your Marquesas, your Talbots.
Okay, wait a minute. Braid specs, mm-hmm. 400, explain it.
400 is our 40-pound class reel. So 40-pound braid is what that reel's going to be made for.
Hmm.
That's cool.
Okay, that's great.
So yeah. What other sizes do you have?
We make a 300 up to a 1,000 size, so a 30 to 100-pound class reel.
So your 300 reel is supposedly really good for 30-pound braid,
exactly.
400 for 40, so on and so forth.
And it's basically capacity. So anything in that size frame, you're going to fit about 400 yards, give or take, of that line class.
Okay, but there's no reason if I got 300, I couldn't do, like, say, 60-pound braid on it.
Easily.
Because I'd still get 200 yards.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's got more than enough stopping.
If you wanted to snook fish the bridge or go to El Joe Bean and lose a little 300, you'd have a blast with, you know, pitching live baits and live ladyfish for those monster snook on a class reel that size.
Okay. Now, getting out in the Gulf, so you're talking about a Fury 400
mm-hmm.
for 30 to 60 feet of water. Now, let's go 80 to 120.
Okay. 80 to 120, I would go step up from there and go to the 500 size and probably use 50 to 65-pound braid.
Now, just going back a second, now on that Fury 400,
mm-hmm.
on the single speed, because in 30 to 60 feet of water, I want a 2-speed. I don't like single speed reels, but you could actually do that pretty well with a single speed.
You could as well, yes. And if you wanted something versatile in a single speed, you could always get the lower gear ratio of the two. So we build it in a 6-to-1 or a 4-to-1. So if you're strictly bottom fishing, a 4-to-1 still picks up enough line, but you're not going to be, you know, you're going to be drowning it to the surface, but you're going to have to drill a little harder. But it is good to get it off the bottom.
But now, once I'm in 80-to-120, I think I'm going to avoid the single speeds.
Definitely. I'd say once you hit that 100-foot mark is when you start thinking two-speed only.
Yeah, because for me, that's about 80 feet, because that's a lot of cranking with a single speed. And if I got 6-to-1 on the single speed, it's really hard to get them off the bottom. It's like trying to start a car. If you got a 4-speed truck and you want to start in third gear, and it just kind of lugs, blah, 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 from that, gradually you go faster and faster. But it's much better to start in low gear. So you would have to use the lower gear ratio to get them off the body in that 80-to-120. The lower gear ratio, like the 3-to-1s or 4-to-1s versus a 6-to-1, but then you're cranking all day to get it to the surface.
Yeah, definitely.
It just takes you so long. In my instance, I definitely want a 2-speed once I'm hitting that 80-to-120.
Exactly, yeah, and it's also very good because once you hit that 80-to-120, you're going to start, you know, being acceptable to other species aside from what you're targeting. There's nothing that says a gag grouper that's 30 pounds isn't going to be in there where your honey hole 8-pound mango spot is. So having that low gear ratio, hooking a different species, hooking a big red grouper and getting them off the bottom quickly is a, you know, make or break point in catching or losing that fish.
All right. So to me, what is the reel? I interrupted you so many times, I don't know if you've said it or not.
I would say...
80-to-120, what are we talking about?
A Valiant 500 2-speed. It's a twin drag model reel.
Okay. Now, Valiant does come in a single speed.
It does as well.
For people who just don't want to pay that little extra.
For sure.
I always wonder what guys, they're paying $200 to $500 in gas to get out there. All the bait and everything else. Throw a couple extra bucks. I mean... I always tell people, with this kind of fishing, don't buy the expensive rods. Because the higher end the rod, the more graphite in it, the more likely it is to blow up.
Definitely.
Touch the gunwale under pressure, do stuff with that graphite, it's going to blow. That's the nature of it. I want E-glass, T-glass, all these, they're less expensive materials, but they're stronger.
Definitely.
They're a little tiny bit heavier, but not a lot. But the strength is unbelievable, and they're very forgiving. I can tap the gunwale with it. Somebody can grab the end of the rod and push up. I'm probably not going to break it. It might, but it's much less likely than a graphite.
Definitely.
So if you spend a little less money on your rod and throw that extra money at the reel, because that's where it's like, you know, having a... If you're rebuilding an old car, you could put the original four-cylinder in it, or you could put a small block Chevy V8 in it.
or like Dee last week, she was fishing with a broomstick.
You gotta love Dee.
Yeah.
She goes out, she's telling us how she's catching these snook. What are you using? A broomstick.
Yeah.
Literally a broomstick. Not a heavy action rod. A broomstick with string tied to it. That's how she snook it.
She's my hero.
Yeah. That is awesome.
So, any questions?
Well, of course I want to know all the things that girls want to know, like the website. Where's the website that I can go and I can comparison shop all these different reels and see which different ones you have, warranty, what kind of warranty does it come with? And
yeah, so the website's going to be www.accuratefishing.com.
Okay.
You can kind of go through the Furies and all of our different reel models. It kind of breaks it down, size, and kind of what fish you can target and different stuff like that on the website.
Spell accurate.
A-C-C-U... R-A-T-E.
Okay. Did he get that right?
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, it's on my shirt.
I was going to say, I was just waiting for you to whip that shirt out.
Yeah, start reading off it.
Twist it around so you can see it. Now, I will tell you, one of the original problems we had with Accurate Reel, and early on, and up until the last year or so, warranty was a problem with Accurate. That's straight up honest. I know you don't want to hear anything bad about your company, but we had real definite warranty issues because it was so hard to send the reel to California. They'd have to fix it, send it back. It was a major pain. But now we have you, and it's one of the reasons I'm back selling Accurate Reels, that I'm endorsing them. Yes, they're good. Yes, they're good for the money. But if you have a problem with one of them, you simply bring it to the store. Austin will come to the store, fix the reel, you're in good shape. And he's done it several times for us.
the whole warranty problems, which was my original complaint with Accurate, made a great product, but any reel can have a problem. I don't care if you pay $20,000 for a reel or $20, it can have a problem. And you got to have somebody standing behind it. Now we got Austin, and I'm not blowing smoke when I tell you, you've made a 100% difference in my opinion of Accurate reels. I think American made, great quality, good products, all that kind of stuff, but now they got you, makes it worth buying again. Before that, spending the extra money, having to mail it all the way off, it was a real problem, real pain, and they weren't that nice, to be quite honest. Now they've gone through some management changes, things are a lot better there. Getting back to what reel was it you said?
The Valiant 500 two-speed. Yep.
500. Now, what's the difference between a Valiant and a Fury?
You're going to a twin drag model from a single drag model. And you're actually going to a weight reduction. So, our old tried and true Boss Extreme reel got overhauled, and we, innovative, made it lighter. The Valiant series is now kind of our tried and true backbone of the company now. So,
okay, now. We're out there 80 to 120 feet of water. What are we looking for? What fish are we going after?
You're going to go for that. You're in adult red snapper territory there now. So you're probably going to avoid some of those, pesky 2 to 5 pound fish in your shallows water. You're going to get in that 10, 12, 14 pound class red snapper, if not bigger, in that 80 to 120 foot of water.
So most of the time fish, the ones you find in shallower water are a little bit smaller. The further out you get, the bigger the fish seem to get.
Definitely.
Now, Jeannie, any ideas why would that be? You can shake your head.
Hi.
Give me a guess.
I don't know.
My guess.
Okay.
There's no way to prove this, but my guess, and you're learning how I work. I guess at a lot of stuff. I'm on hypotheses. My hypothesis, my guess, is that the further out you get, the less people go there. If you're on a reef that's 2-3 miles out, almost any boat can reach it. Getting out 20 miles out, less boats, 40 miles, less boat, 50 miles, much less boats.
I was kind of going more toward temperature change.
And
kind of like the further north you get, the bigger the deer get.
No.
The colder it is, the... I was kind of going with temperature change.
And that could be. See, the thing is, you're not wrong, but it's a really good idea. Austin, your opinion? Why is it the fish get so much bigger out there?
Temperature change could have some things to do with it. You're getting closer to the loop current. You're going to have different water come in that's coming over from, down from the Keys and stuff like that. So that's a great observation on that. What I would say is it has to do with pressure, for sure. Your 20-mile mark, almost any bay boat on a calm day is going to run out there and run back, no problem. You go 50, 60 miles, you're talking, you want an E-perb, you probably want twins on your, on your boat. You're going to get into a different class of bottom fishermen, because if they're spending that gas, if they're spending that bait, you're going to target, you're going to catch, so you're going to run a little further. And the pressure I think you're dealing with in that deeper water is just less than what you're going to get in that 30, 60.
Right. So, in other words, with pressure, what type of bait, if you're going to go out fishing for, let's do two things, grouper and American red snapper, what's two baits you would have to take with you, or the two you most want to take with you for grouper? What's the two you most want to take with you for American red?
So for grouper, definitely, I'm a big live bait fisherman for grouper. I think it's hard to beat a live pigfish. Live pigfish, get a bunch of pinfish to bring out there. And with red grouper, I mean, squid. They love squid. So I've caught red grouper on squid probably more than I've caught it on any other bait.
Alright.
So are you catching your squid?
No, definitely. Okay, frozen squid's perfect.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
So 5 pound
large squid.
For your grouper, red grouper, gags, black, whatever, your grouper bait would be live pinfish or pigfish? P-I-N or P-I-G?
Yep.
P-I-N fish are very similar to P-I-G, except the P-I-G make a lot more noises when you put a hook in them. They literally go, and they grunt, and they make all these cool noises. So that actually makes them a little better bait than a PIN fish. So, squid and them. Now, American red snapper, what's your baits?
I'd say frozen cigar minnows, number one. Sardines, second to it, as a frozen bait. And then your bigger quality fish are still going to eat some of those baits that you use for grouper. A grouper might eat a pinfish the size of your hand. A little 3 or 4 inch pinfish, great snapper candy as well. So red snapper are very aggressive fish.
So, and best two. Mm-hmm. Best two for the American red snapper.
I'd say cigar minnows and pinfish.
Okay, cigar minnows, I think, are sold out on the west coast of Florida.
That's why, probably, right there.
What's really weird is Florida can be broken into three different bait categories. The panhandle down to about Tampa, all about cigar minnows. Mm-hmm. From Naples, Marco Island, down through the Keys, all about ballyhoo. Mm-hmm. And from, you know, Naples, Marco Island up to Tampa, Spanish sardines. And the only reason the cigar minnows are much more popular on the American red snapper is because they stay on the hook better. Spanish sardines are notoriously soft, mushy, nasty, oily bait that, you know, only a fish could love. You know, I don't even know if their mothers like them. But they're soft, they're mushy, oily, nasty, but they catch a tremendous amount of fish, but they're very hard to keep on the hook. Whereas the cigar minnows are very, very similar. And one of the best ways to tell the difference on a cigar minnow, between on the lateral line on the sides of the fish from the dorsal back to the tail, they have a very rough edge on there. I forget what that roughness is called, but it's real rough on the lateral lines. Mm-hmm. But it extends from the about the middle of the dorsal fin right back to the tail, where a Spanish sardine does not have that rough mark on it. But when you catch them in the wild, we actually get wild cigar minnows and Spanish sardines right here off of Boca Grande, out in the Gulf out there. I've seen Spanish sardines in Shaw Harbor multiple times over the years, but I've only seen cigar minnows very, very... It's not like it doesn't happen that they'll come in through Boca Grande Pass, but it's not common whatsoever. That's every few years. But in the near Gulf, actually, quite often do you see cigar minnows working the shoreline. Have you ever heard about anybody catching them with a sabiki?
I have, yes. Yeah, for sure. I actually, I've caught cigar minnows a handful of times on the East Coast, but purely by accident, where I think they're thread fins or I think I'm chummed up, you know, pilchards and stuff like that, and I put a stringer down and come up, and they're all cigar minnows, and everyone's celebrating because it's, you know, gold bait over there.
Yeah, so. It's gold. I mean, so if you're out, you're going out through Boca Grande Pass, go out, there's still some of that square marker left. It's a triangle frame, square frame marker. Or anywhere where you see thread fins, and start sabiking for the thread fins, dropping little bits down. I put a little piece of fish bites on each one of the hooks of my sabiki, a little heavier sinker, drop it straight down and jig it up and down. I did use a lot of squid. But to do the squid on there, I actually have to have a pair of scissors to cut it into little pieces. And if I'm bringing a scissors, I just cut up the fish bite small and stick it on there. It seems to work better. But when you're bringing them up, if you think you've got sardines on there, feel the sides of the tail, right in front of the tail, and see if it feels rough. If it is, that's a cigar minnow, not a sardine. They're very hard to tell the difference of. Most people don't know a white bait from a green thread fin. And it's that close a difference. So, but really good bait out there. Now, to find some of the really, really big American red snappers, we're talking out in 150, 180, 200 foot of water.
Definitely. Yeah, and they're going to be holding to wrecks and ledges like jacks do. And they'll be stacked off the bottom just like jacks are. So, you get in some 20, 25 pound class fish in that depth out here.
So, what's the reel for that?
I'd bump it up to a 600 size, so going up the line. And we're talking now going from your 50-pound class tackle to your 60, 80-pound tackle.
Now, you and I were talking about this before the show, and what rods were you talking about? What type of rod?
So I use a lot of jigging-style rods from your 6.5 to 7.5-foot range. Some like a shorter rod, some like a much longer rod. The reason I use that is to clear the cowlings on the back of my little center console. The 7-foot rod's a little easier than, say, a 6-foot rod. So for my personal preference.
You're using that longer rod just so you can actually get the tip in the water.
Yeah.
Because, yes, it's 7-foot long, but when you get a fish on it, that shortens it up to anywhere from 5 to 6 foot. And if you've got a 6-foot rod, you're literally shortening it up to 4 foot, maybe. Yeah. With the bend in the rod, so you got to be able to clear the outboards. Now, if I'm fishing over the sides of the boat, not over the back, I usually use a 5'8 to 6 foot, maybe a 6'6, because I get more leverage on the shorter rods. But it makes it very difficult to fish over the back of a boat with outboards on it.
Definitely does.
Really tough. So that's where you get that longer rod. But see, you're a lot younger. You don't have any gray in that beard. If you had some gray in that beard, your rods would be a foot
shorter.
Yeah. I'm telling you right now. You know, when I was younger, 6, 7, 8 foot, I didn't care. Give me a fishing pole. Let me pull. You know, coming in at the end of the day, feeling all beat up, that was actually a good thing. Now I come back, I'm beat up. Takes me 2-3 days to recover. I got to kind of lay up, whine a lot, you know. So I use shorter rods that don't hurt me. Have you been out in that 60, 80 feet of water in the Gulf?
I have. But I was going to ask, and excuse me for sounding naive. Now, I've been to Lauderdale. You're from Lauderdale, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I've been to Lauderdale once. I went over there fishing. And I know we were a mile, 2 miles offshore, and we were in 800 foot of water.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking here between the difference, you know, fishing between 80 and 120 foot, and this is what we'd use. But how does that, so how does that change over there when you're in 800 foot of water? And, I mean, you got to be using a whole entirely different setup. Plus, what are your fish like over there?
Yeah, so I'm going to be targeting mostly, like, mutton snapper.
Okay.
Funny enough, a few of my wrecks that I fish do have American red snapper, that's the fish we're talking about today, but I'm catching them in state waters. It's one of the few places on the Atlantic side you can catch them in state waters where they're not regulated. So a 20-inch fish is a keeper year-round, which I've only caught a handful of them, but mutton snapper is kind of my target species over there.
I'm with you. So now what kind of reel are, I mean, you've obviously got
very similar on reels.
Your capacity's like got to be a lot more so than what we're using.
Yeah, we're still fishing kind of the same depth. I don't fish much inside about 80 feet, which is less than a mile from the inlet.
Okay.
So, but that next mile from 80 feet, you're in 200 feet. That following mile, 3 miles, you're in 450 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So where I'm running 2 miles, 3 miles average, where you'd be running anywhere from 30 to 80 miles out here. So the pressure, going back to how many boats are accessible to fish that, is why a lot of times we have to drop down our leader size and our long leaders and try to get away from the wreck and have perfect presentation, because you're fishing for a couple fish on that wreck, and if you hook them and it gets sharked or gone, you're going to a new spot.
It's interesting how different it is on the other side of Florida than what it is here.
Well, can you imagine if we had that kind of fishing within a mile, mile and a half of the shore here?
I'm telling you, I'd have an offshore boat. Well, I would definitely do much more
in a
offshore.
Rowboat.
Right, exactly.
You could take a rowboat out a mile and catch these fish.
See paddle boarders out there.
Kayak fishing is huge over by us, and it's grown a lot. And that's one of the things I used to do prior to owning a little center console and catch sailfish, wahoo, anything in your kayak off the beach.
I would definitely do a lot more offshore fishing. Yeah. That's one of the things that...
Well, they don't have Charlotte Harbor over there.
They don't.
Now, we have Charlotte Harbor, which is one of the most amazing resources.
Yeah.
Because most of the time it protects us from the red tide. We have a lot of inshore species. Then we can slip out in the Gulf for the offshore species. But...
We have the best of both worlds, definitely.
Yeah, it would be nice if the deep water was
a little closer. Yes.
But still, you know, you can go out and catch snappers on any of the nearshore reefs. There's a lot of the African pompano are in thick on a lot of the reefs right now. A lot of guys coming in, and they're catching 30-some-inch pompano, or permit, rather, 30-some-inch permit on a lot of the nearshore reefs, from the power poles, Helens, getting out towards Boxcar, some of these other ones. You go there, and there's just big schools of permit going over the top of them. Now, the next time you go there, they might not be there. They tend to go on one, then they're going to move to the next one. But we've got cobia out there, permit. We've had schools, a little bit of pompano. They got very, very thin on us, but a lot of Spanish mackerel. We're hearing some barracuda out there, a lot of sharks. So the nearshore fishing's actually pretty good right now. Now, what I like to do when I go out here is I use a way shorter leader than most people. But I would have to say, if I was going to go out to fish for grouper or American reds at this point, I'd be probably using a chicken rig or pogie rig, double drop rig, same rig, three different names. where I'm going to put a swivel at the top of the rig. I'm going to come down either to a three-way swivel or a loop knot where I have a hook coming off very short, close to the leader. Then I'm going to go down about another foot and a half, and I'm going to have another hook tied there. I'm going to come down another foot, and I'm going to have a very heavy sinker on it. So I've got a sinker on the bottom. My hooks are above that coming out. One going to be up off the bottom, and the second one, the leader's long enough where even though it's up a little bit, it can lay right on the bottom. So I got one suspended up, one laying on the bottom, but with the sinker below it, as soon as the fish pulls on it, I can feel that bite. If the sinker's above the hook, you've got to have it free running, or you're never going to feel the bite. They have to move the sinker before you know they're there. This way, as long as your line's a little tight, you can feel those first initial nibbles and then be able to set up on them. Now, I like using a 6 to 9-aught circle hook when I'm fishing for these grouper or the American red snapper because of the size of bait that I'm putting on. If I was using a smaller bait like a shrimp or a small piece of squid, I could go all the way down to like a 3-aught or a 2-aught. But because I'm using a lot of times half of a whole squid, big chunk of a squid wing, pinfish, squirrel fish, all these other baits, I got to use a bigger hook to accommodate that bigger bait. Otherwise, they grab the bait, but they never get the hook. What is your preference on those?
My golden rule for mostly snapper and grouper fishing is like a 7-aught starting point, and I'll go all the way up to maybe a 10. So for a bigger, you know, gag grouper.
So I'm one size off. No, I'm right doing 6 to 9. Exactly. You're doing 7 to
yeah,
10.
Exactly. Right there.
So we're on the same page. Now me, I have used less than 40-pound leader fluorocarbon, but I like staying at 40, and then if I'm getting into some bigger fish, I'll jump up to 60 and see where my bite's at. If I start losing a lot of bites, I got to drop down to the 40 again. But if I can maintain bites, I'd rather have that 60-pound leader on there for wear through.
Definitely.
You know, if they nick it on a rock, I've still got enough to pull them up with. But where with the 40, one little nick and a big fish, you don't have enough thickness of line left. If you got 40-pound test, it's cut in half, that's 20. If it's cutting three quarters of the way through, you only got 10-pound to pull with. So, you know, I'm using the thickness of the leader judge for brazen cut through and what I have left if it gets nicked. What power pressure or pulling power do I have? Now, if I'm fishing more open bottom, I'll switch down to 20-25-pound test leader because I'm not worried about getting hit on anything. Mm-hmm. And I can actually rip the fish up. What are your leader choices about?
I usually start right at 50. So 50 is kind of my starting point. If I'm confident I'm getting enough bites on 50, I'll keep it at 50. If I think that I broke a fish off or broke two fish off, I'll probably jump straight to 60, like you said, or even up to 80 if I'm fishing for, you know, a grouper in the area. But 50 is kind of my starting point because I use a little longer leader than most. So,
all right, how long a leader do you use?
On the Gulf Coast, about 6 to 8 feet.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's kind of my sweet zone on this side. On the East Coast, I use about 25 to 30 feet.
All right. My question is, what are you tying your leader to?
This side, I'm doing a egg sinker swivel with the leader and then your circle hook snout.
All right. What line are you using?
I'm using 50-pound braid with a small top shot of monofilament on top of that for abrasion resistance.
What? Why bother? Take your leader, load it right to the light. If you're in 60 feet of water, see, 30 feet is 10 yards.
Yeah.
All right? 30 feet, that's 10 yards of line.
Definitely.
Right? 60, that's 20 yards of line. If you got 100 yards of line on there, you're pretty much go. Why wouldn't you just run the leader all the way to the reel and say the heck with it?
You could easily, yeah.
No, I mean it's a real question. Spending all that money filling up with a 50-pound braid, so doing the top shots,
in that depth of water. I'd probably only have about maybe 10 feet of like a shock leader in front of the weight. So you're really still utilizing the braid, not stretching everything like that. But as deep as I go, the deeper I go, my top shot's going to get longer and my leader typically gets longer.
All right, why wouldn't you just fish mono?
You could easily, yeah, in that depth, no problem at all.
right. Now, but RJ, what? Am I misunderstanding something here?
It's all preference.
What is the advantage to that?
I think he's right about the preference side of it, but I'm going to go with you about, you know, the economy of the rig.
Well, the only reason thing somebody's explained to me and said is, well, if I get something really big on, it takes a lot of line. And I just think to myself, I don't know, I'm grouper fishing. Yeah. I just spent $50 on braid, put the top shot on, then put the leader on. Why wouldn't I just put mono on it?
Yeah.
I'm old, I'm lazy, I don't want to do all that work. So I just, there's got to be a reason.
Another good reason would be braid's diameter is so thin and you can pack so much on the reel. Granted, it's expensive, but you're keeping your inches per crank up with that high spool diameter. So if you're putting that much line in the water, you're still utilizing a full spool on the reel. So when you go to crank that fish in high or in low, you're still utilizing your high 20 inches per crank, where if the diameter was smaller on the spool, you might be in the teens and you're not moving that fish as much.
All right, Jeannie, we've been talking about this. What questions would you ask here?
Again, being naive, I'm completely confused why we use a 30-foot leader.
You do get some weird looks. What? But, mostly on the East Coast, it's the pressure of the fish. I'm using 40 or 50-pound leader, 7-aught circle loop, 30 feet a leader, and it's...
They do it here, too.
Oh, do they?
I know guys that are out there that got 15, 20-plus feet a leader on, and I'm... That's why it brings my question is, why do they put line on it? Why not just fill it up with the leader?
But what's the benefit? What is the advantage?
Benefit, on the East Coast, we have current a mile offshore that could be 3.5-4 miles an hour. So a short leader in that distance from the bait, if it's a dead bait, will spin a lot. So the further away you can get in, you can scope it out on the bottom and keep it from spinning. You don't have that line twist. I'm sure you've seen someone bottom fishing and bring up a bird's nest galore, all their weight and everything's tangled up. The further away you can get that bait and lay it down on the bottom to keep the presentation accurate is, you know, something that can trigger a bite where you might not be able to trigger a bite with a shorter leader.
RJ, okay. Questions and opinions on any of that?
No, I think I'm going to pass on this one. The 30-foot leader, the way you just explained it, made sense because I've seen that underwater where, you know, a bait is spinning and it's getting closer and closer to the weight. You know, you're just moving it closer and closer. And a lot of the reef fish have very good vision underwater, like groupers see really well and permit see really well. So they spot things like weights and things like that. So that makes sense when you talk about the current. But I think on this side of the world, you're not going to see that. We don't have those giant, fast-moving currents at those depths.
No, on
like
this
if I was diving, you know, with a 3 or 4 mile an hour current, I'd better have a sea anchor with me or something to be able to stay in the same spot, because you're not going to swim against that for any length of time. But I've never experienced that on this side of the Gulf, and I've dove just about everywhere where I have to fight to stay in place to watch something.
Now, your current runs from south to north.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. Yeah, the Gulf Stream's heading up to Ireland.
Yep, exactly.
Right. Our current runs north to south here, and you're exactly the opposite on the East Coast. You know, so it's just kind of funny because when I tell people here, if you're going to go snook fishing in the morning, you walk onto the beach, turn to the left, and start casting. And because I want to work my lure back against the current, most fish go swimming up current wanting to smell what's in front of them. And it's very hard to work a lure with the current. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get the right action out of it. So you guys do exactly the opposite, though. You're throwing to the north.
Yeah. Typically with that current, you're going to be anchoring on the southern part of the water, or the south of what you're trying to fish, leading out anchor line to your wreck or your location, and then your bait and all your presentation is going that way as well, north to that side of the wreck.
So you guys are completely back-asswards to the real
world. Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right, I get that.
30-foot leader sounds normal to me. No one else gets it. Yeah, I get it. It's good.
It was too easy. I'm sorry.
He took the whole show to set you up for that.
Yeah. It only took me 45 minutes to get there. Trout fishing, reasonable to poor. Snook everywhere. The mouths of the canals, and with this rain that we've had, a lot of snook have pushed up back up to 41. They've gone way back up in the canals. They're hanging around out the by the dams, all that food that's being washed over. Tiny minnows, bugs, frogs, fish, all that stuff that gets washed over as that goes on. Now, that's going to end in the next day or so. As that water drops down, the rain's going to back off. Now, if it doesn't rain for a week, it's not supposed to rain again till sometime next week. Remember, that's 4 or 5 days, and those fish are going to stack up underneath those dams again once it starts to rain. They're leaving now. They're going away from the spillways, away from the dams. But the snook are at the mouth of the canals. They're on the beaches. They're in the passes. Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, Gasparilla Sound, Pine Island Sound. Sharks pretty much anywhere. But if you're up in the harbor, remember, most of these sharks have smaller mouth. So a piece of bait that's about 2 fingers wide is going to catch more sharks. A piece of bait 4 finger wide is going to get a lot of hits, but they're never going to get in their mouth. You're not going to get a hook set. You're just going to have a tremendous amount of hit after hit after hit. Oh, I had 10 hits last night. We'll make the bait a little smaller, and you'll actually have had caught 10 sharks. Now, with the redfish, we're hearing about 1s, 2s, 3s. My cutoff's got a good population of redfish. Two Pines is doing well, just south of Matt Lachey. Had a couple reports, but not sure I'm really ready to say there's redfish around the Indian Fields. But out on Pine Island Sound, the further south you get down in Pine Island Sound, the better off you're doing on some of the reds. Sanibel right now is just going crazy with whiting, sharks, a little bit of Spanish mackerel, all kinds of stuff. Great reports. If you want to go down to Sanibel, great time of year to do it. Go down, fish for a while, stop at one of the restaurants, nice little day. I think it's about $7 to get on the island. But, hey, it's Sanibel. You got to expect a little bit of that. out around here, that it? Okay, Fish and Frank here. Jeannie, host of Fishy Radio, be on Fridays coming soon to WKDW. Why do I say WKRP?
And flying turkeys.
RJ in command and control. Fish Frank, bye.